TED Audio Collective.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
Support for TED Talks Daily comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/TED Talks. That's odoo.com/TED Talks. Odoo, modern management made simple. Support for TED Talks Daily is from Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You can say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Like TED Talks? You should check out the TED Radio Hour with NPR. Stay tuned after this talk to hear a sneak peek of this week's episode.
This TED Talk features architecture critic and writer Justin Davidson, recorded live at TED NYC 2017.
Imagine that when you walked in here this evening, you discovered that everybody in the room looked almost exactly the same. Ageless, raceless, generically good-looking. That person sitting right next to you might have the most idiosyncratic inner life, but you don't have a clue because we're all wearing the same blank expression all the time. That is the kind of creepy transformation that is taking over cities. Only it applies to buildings, not people. Cities are full of roughness and shadow, texture and color. You can still find architectural surfaces of great individuality and character in apartment buildings in Riga and Yemen, social housing in Vienna, Hopi villages in Arizona, brownstones in New York, wooden houses in San Francisco. These aren't palaces or cathedrals. These are just ordinary residences expressing the ordinary splendor of cities. And the reason they're like that is that the need for shelter is so bound up with the human desire for beauty. Their rough surfaces give us a touchable city, right? Streets that you can read by running your fingers over brick and stone. But that's getting harder to do because cities are becoming smooth. New downtowns sprout towers that are almost always made of concrete and steel and covered in glass. You can look at skylines all over the world, Houston, Guangzhou, Frankfurt, and you see the same army of high-gloss robots marching over the horizon. Now, just think of everything we lose when architects stop using the full range of available materials. When we reject granite, and limestone, and sandstone, and wood, and copper, and terracotta, and brick, and wattle, and plaster, we simplify architecture, and we impoverish cities. It's as if you reduced all of the world's cuisines down to airline food. Huh? Chicken or pasta? But worse still, assemblies of glass towers, like this one in Moscow, suggest a disdain for the civic and communal aspects of urban living. Right? Buildings like these are intended to enrich their owners and tenants, but not necessarily the lives of the rest of us, those of us who navigate the spaces between the buildings. And we expect to do so for free. Shiny towers are an invasive species, and they are choking our cities and killing off public space. We tend to think of a facade as being like makeup, a decorative layer applied at the end to a building that's effectively complete. But just because a facade is superficial doesn't mean it's not also deep. Let me give you an example of how a city's surfaces affect the way we live in it. When I visited Salamanca in Spain, I gravitated to the Plaza Mayor at all hours of the day. Right? And early in the morning, sunlight rakes the facades, sharpening shadows. And at night, lamplight segments the buildings into hundreds of distinct areas, balconies and windows and arcades, each one a separate pocket of visual activity. That detail and depth, that glamour, gives the plaza a theatrical quality. It becomes a stage where the generations can meet. You have teenagers sprawling on the pavers, seniors monopolizing the benches, and real life starts to look like an opera set. The curtain goes up on Salamanca. So just because I'm talking about the exteriors of buildings, not form, not function, not structure, even so, those surfaces give texture to our lives. Because buildings create the spaces around them. And those spaces can draw people in or push them away. And the difference often has to do with the quality of those exteriors. So one contemporary equivalent of the Plaza Mayor in Salamanca is the Place de la Défense in Paris, a windswept, glass-walled open space that office workers hurry through on their way from the metro to their cubicles, but otherwise spend as little time in as possible. In the early 1980s, the architect Philip Johnson tried to recreate a gracious European plaza in Pittsburgh. This is PPG Place, a half acre of open space encircled by commercial buildings made of mirrored glass. And he ornamented those buildings with metal trim and bays and Gothic turrets, which really pop on the skyline. But at ground level, the plaza feels like a black glass cage. I mean, sure, in summertime, kids are running back and forth through the fountain, and there's ice skating in the winter, but it lacks the informality of a leisurely hangout. It's just not the sort of place you really want to just hang out and chat. Public spaces thrive or fail for many different reasons. Architecture is only one, but it's an important one. Some recent plazas, like Federation Square in Melbourne, or Superkilen in Copenhagen, succeed because they combine old and new, rough and smooth, neutral and bright colors, and because they don't rely excessively on glass. Now, I'm not against glass. It's an ancient and versatile material. It's easy to manufacture and transport and install and replace and clean. It comes in everything from enormous ultra-clear sheets to translucent bricks. New coatings make it change mood in the shifting light. In expensive cities like New York, it has the magical power of being able to multiply real estate values by allowing views, which is really the only commodity that developers have to offer to justify those surreal prices. In the middle of the 19th century, with the construction of the Crystal Palace in London, glass leapt to the top of the list of quintessentially modern substances. By the mid-20th century, it had come to dominate the downtowns of some American cities, largely through some really spectacular office buildings like Lever House in Midtown Manhattan, designed by Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill. Eventually, the technology advanced to the point where architects could design structures so transparent they practically disappear. And along the way, glass became the default material of the high-rise city. And there's a very powerful reason for that, because as the world's populations converge on cities, the least fortunate pack into jerry-built shantytowns. But hundreds of millions of people need apartments and places to work in ever larger buildings. So it makes economic sense to put up towers and wrap them in cheap and practical curtain walls. But glass has a limited ability to be expressive. This is a section of wall framing a plaza in the pre-Hispanic city of Mitla in southern Mexico. Those 2,000-year-old carvings make it clear that this was a place of high ritual significance. Today, we look at those and we can see a historical and textural continuity between those carvings, the mountains all around, and that church, which is built on top of the ruins using stone plundered from the site. In nearby Oaxaca, even ordinary plaster buildings become canvases for bright colors, political murals, and sophisticated graphic arts. It's an intricate communicative language that an epidemic of glass would simply wipe out. The good news is that architects and developers have begun to rediscover the joys of texture without backing away from modernity. Some find innovative uses for old materials like brick and terracotta. Others invent new products like the molded panels that Snohetta used to give their San Francisco Museum of Modern Art that crinkly sculptural quality. The architect Stefano Boeri even created living facades. This is his vertical forest, a pair of apartment towers in Milan, whose most visible feature is greenery. And Boeri is designing a version of this for Nanjing in China. And imagine, if green facades were as ubiquitous as glass ones, how much cleaner the air in Chinese cities would become. But the truth is that these are mostly one-offs, boutique projects, not easily reproduced at a global scale. And that is the point. When you use materials that have a local significance, you prevent cities from all looking the same. Copper has a long history in New York, the Statue of Liberty, the crown of the Woolworth Building, but it fell out of fashion for a long time until shop architects used it to cover the American Copper Building, a pair of twisting towers on the East River. It's not even finished, and you can see the way sunset lights up that metallic facade, which will weather to green as it ages. Buildings can be like people. Their faces broadcast their experience. And that's an important point, because when glass ages, you just replace it. And the building looks pretty much the same way it did before until eventually it's demolished. Almost all other materials have the ability to absorb infusions of history and memory and project it into the present. The firm Aeneid clad the Utah Natural History Museum in Salt Lake City in copper and zinc, ores that have been mined in the area for 150 years, and that also camouflage the building against the ochre hills so that you have a natural history museum that reflects the region's natural history. And when the Chinese Pritzker Prize winner Wang Xu was building a history museum in Ningbo, he didn't just create a wrapper for the past. He built memory right into the walls by using brick and stones and shingles salvaged from villages that had been demolished. Now, architects can use glass in equally lyrical and inventive ways. Here in New York, two buildings, one by Jean Nouvel and this one by Frank Gehry, face off across West 19th Street. And the play of reflections that they toss back and forth is like a symphony in light. But when a city defaults to glass as it grows, it becomes a hall of mirrors, disquieting and cold. After all, cities are places of concentrated variety, where the world's cultures and languages and lifestyles come together and mingle. So rather than encase all that variety and diversity in buildings of crushing sameness, we should have an architecture that honors the full range of the urban experience. Thank you.
For more TED Talks, go to TED.com.
20 years ago, Jimmy Wales founded Wikipedia as a place for everyone to share information. But he wasn't exactly sure how to run the site.
How do you put together a system that will generate a reasonable degree of quality and, you know, be open?
Ideas about building communities, online and off. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Subscribe or listen to the TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
PRX.